Today on our program, we have a couple of guests. We have one in the studio, and we have another on the telephone. And we are going to be talking about the Lighthouse in Harbor Beach. The tours are starting to come up again. In the studio here, we have Annette Sweet. She's the director of Docents. They're the guides out there at the Lighthouse. And on the phone, we have Buzz Herr. He is chair of the Lighthouse Preservation Society and head of the Michigan Lighthouse Alliance. So I'd like to thank you both for being with us today on the program. And first of all, when do the Lighthouse tours start again?
The Lighthouse tours begin this Saturday, June 24th. Our first tour, boat goes out at 9:20, and the last tour boat leaves at noon. We will be there every Saturday throughout the summer through the end of September.
Okay, now Buzz is on the phone, and we were trying to help him, you know, not fall off the road or something as he's traveling, but a little bit about the activities out there at the Lighthouse. I understand there's a project underway right now.
Fog signal house building that was there from the Lighthouse beginnings back in 1885. So that was taken down when the Coast Guard decommissioned the staffing of the Lighthouse and turned it into an automated station. And they didn't need basically almost everything about the Lighthouse that used to be operated out there, foghorn, radio direction finding, those sort of older style technologies, were all replaced by GPS and a little foghorn that can make, the right signal. And so there just wasn't any need for any of that equipment, and therefore no need for the building. And so they took it down and basically left the lighthouse itself as a glorified pole to put to keep the light going on top, and had a little fog building on the building signal on the top deck, and that was it.
But the thing was is that the building that housed the foghorn, the materials that were used made it susceptible to deterioration.
Right. It was actually a very well thought out building because it lasted well over 100 years out there. And as I was sharing with you on the phone earlier and prior to the interview, that place is a lot like a vertical ship. And if you left any boat sitting out there year round, 12 months a year for over 100 years, that would be quite something to say if any of the structures lasted that long without undergoing serious damage. And even though it's protected by the break wall, especially now with the water levels up high the way they are, waves come right over the top of the break wall, and then in the winter when you have freezing temperatures, you have a lot of ice buildup. Most lighthouses in the northern Great Lakes area and other northern parts of the U.S. and the world, their biggest problem is ice for about 3 or 4 months a year that tends to build up to a point where they'll literally coat the whole structure and not only cover it but add a lot of weight, especially on the top of that fog signal building. So if you were to, and we hope you all will start going out as of this coming Saturday to visit, you'll see that the construction, it's all open still, so you'll see that the type of lumber, we followed all the same drawings, and the type of lumber we use and construction method, it is a really solid structure. So we're learning from our forebears from a long time ago how to build something that will last over 100 years out there.
Well, they tended to overbuild, you know. They usually made things that were made to last. Today they're specced out to the minimum specs, but back then they didn't have the engineers and they just built them to last.
Yep, that's true. And I had a group out there the other day of some donors to our project, and you know, I was saying back in the day when there was no GPS to lay down the cornerstone for that lighthouse and fog and break wall, which then turned out to be a mile long to have that world's largest protected harbor in place, and then just to work your way around weather and all sorts of conditions to not build it by hand but pretty darn close. It was an amazing feat. It took 11 years to build that harbor, and the last two or three they were building the lighthouse to cap it all off, and it was for its time, it was an amazing structure, and many local people participated in the project, so it was a giant jobs program, and they gathered stones from all up and down the shoreline to fill in the wood cribs underneath the, what would be the concrete break wall. And I mean, we have a lot of photographs of that. We can show people a lot of the construction methods. And, of course, we have all the drawings. So it's quite a story.
Now, you are not putting the foghorn back in. You're going to turn it into like a museum where you can have more out there for people to see. What was in there originally? Was it just the foghorn, or did they have to have some sort of boiler that made steam to make it go?
Yep. The when we researched the foghorn that we were familiar with, those of us who remember the building before it was taken down, the foghorn that was there was air powered and with a diesel generator. And of course, since we're aiming at the 1920s as a period that we've agreed with National Park Service to restore it to, we couldn't go for that. So what was there then originally were two types of fog signals. One was a big brass bell that sat on the outside of the lighthouse that was rung on a sequence, and the other was steam whistle. And so you're right, there were boilers to generate steam, and then the steam emitted a pretty high-pitched shriek through a couple of whistles that were on top of the fog signal building, and those boilers took up quite a bit of room, and they were wood-fired. So there was this constant project of getting firewood out there so that the lightkeepers could keep those boilers going and ready. And you can imagine what it was like when all of a sudden the fog showed up, and we can't find out whether they actually kept up steam, because fog tends to roll in and out pretty suddenly along the Great Lakes, depending on weather changes. But you can imagine what a, no pun intended, fire drill it was to get a fire going in those boilers and get the heat up so that they could have enough steam to fire off those signals. And we imagine they probably used the bell in and around those dead spots just to make sure that there was something out there that people could recognize. And back in those days, now the freighters go up and down the lake. The downbound channel is 5 miles out, so they're pretty far offshore. But in those days, the sailing ships tended to stay a lot closer to shore because they used markers along the shore basically as navigation. They had no GPS, they had compasses, but as the weather would get rough, it'd be kind of difficult to maintain courses without some sort of visual markers off to their left on the way up and their right on the way down.
Well, I'm sure the residents in Harbor Beach are very glad you're not going to be so authentic that you're going to have this blaring foghorn going off all the time. But
I'm sure they will. But the answer to your question is we are going to put the foghorn and the whistle out there because we have recordings of it. And so what we're envisioning is displays of the types of fog signals that we'll be able to show people in picture form and from the days when they were installed or drawings, if we don't have any photographs of the 20s. And then you can press a button and you can hear the steam. We have recordings of the steam whistles. There's actually a group that meets down in Port Huron every year to have a fog signal off, I guess you'd call it. And they love to get around, and they all have recordings of the different signals around the Great Lakes. And we've been able to get We have a lot of local recordings of the air horns. There were these giant trumpets that shot the sound out into the lake. You just imagine being on duty when those suckers fired up. But we've got recordings, so we plan on putting on exhibits, and the volume won't be quite nearly as loud as the original.
I think you'd blow your stereo out if you tried to match the real volume. But I would imagine the lighthouse keepers, though, if they had to get the foghorn going, they were probably like farmers of that era that, they didn't have hourly forecasts. They kind of knew how to read the weather pretty good. It can fool you, but for the most part, I think they probably, after a while, just kind of learned about the lake.
Yep. There were, they had to keep very accurate records. There were log books about everything, every function they did in any given day. They had, just like a ship, they had a captain's log. They had to keep track of everything, and so they basically left an historical record every year of their experiences, and if there was a change in keepers, they would read through those. And they all, lightkeepers generally, they seem to have been seasoned and experienced people at Harbor Beach who may have served somewhere else. And there was a lot of cross-training in the winter when they wouldn't be out there, when the shipping stopped because of the ice, and, they'd share their stories. So they were... they were very intuitive, as many of our farmers are, and of course don't have, you know, my radar on a cell phone app that they could look at hour by hour to have some idea what's going on.
Now, the building you're working on, the fog signal building, is that going to be completed this year?
The building will be completed this year, at least externally, so that it can be weather tight. So we have, Ron Kleba, who is our terrific restoration expert, and taught many of the area builders in industrial arts class at the high school in Harbor Beach. His goal is he made all the windows out of his son's shop in Oregon, where he spent the winter, and brought them back, and doors. And so those will be installed. The outside sheeting, we have aluminum powder-coated sheeting that looks exactly like the steel sheeting that used to be there, that we'll put on the outside on the roof. It'll be red, and the building will be white. And then the windows will be set in, the doors will be set in, and it'll be weather-tight in time for the fall and winter. And they'll finish the roof sometime within the next week, I think, week or 10 days. It's the goal. We keep getting stumped by the weather, but with all the rain. But anyway, we'll get it weather tight, and then throughout the winter we'll be figuring out what the initial set of exhibits will be for the 2018 tour season.
Is it difficult to get the materials you need to be authentic? I mean, you talked about metal siding. I mean, we think of it today, we think of what's on a pole barn, but that isn't anything like what they had back then. It was more iron thick and difficult to deal with.
It was, and at times, and it's, I mean, for longevity's sake and for maintenance cost sake, the restoration community will recognize that something that looks exactly like what it was is entirely acceptable if it means that you're not going to have to be repainting it every 5 years. Which is pretty expensive to do out there in order to just keep it from having to be painted over the next 5 years. But I will say that, and if people come out, they'll see the size of the lumber and the amount that was used in construction, all according to the original drawing, is they're huge pieces. And Ron, to his credit, rather than, for example, you may have been able to compromise with vinyl clad windows. Nope, we're doing, Ron has handmade all of the windows and the doors, and they're made out of original materials. Unfortunately, we can't find any wavy glass to stick in the windows, but when you go out there and look at it, those will need to be kept up and painted periodically because they are made with all the original materials.
Kind of surprising they put glass in there. I would think that foghorn might have shattered glass.
Well, it shattered eardrums.
Oh, I'm sure the old lighthouse keeper's famous expression when they retired was, huh? What'd you say?
Yeah. Very good, Craig.
You'll
have to keep that for one of your stories to tell.
There you go. What comes after this? I mean, there's always something happening at the lighthouse. You worked on the interior. You worked on getting the replica Fresnel lens up there so that it looks authentic, even though the original's in the Grice Museum for preservation purposes. What's next on the agenda after the fog signal building?
Well, you know, we started this in 1982, and our group, and so we celebrated our 30th anniversary in 2015. And there is a long-range plan that has really picked up momentum now that we're doing all these larger projects. But we had to make sure we had the funding in place. We never have asked the city for a penny. The city owns the structure, which was by design for me. I didn't want our private organization bearing the larger liability issues that go along with having tours on a structure like that. So we have a really unique partnership, and but we raise all our own funds, and the next thing that we see on the horizon, and you're right, you do need to have new things happening in order for people to keep coming. So we will need to re-coat. That's what the painting experts call the type of paint you need to do on a ship like that. We'll probably be doing that project by next year. So the lighthouse itself will look as new as the fog signal building, and then in the meantime, I live back in Vermont in the winter, and I'm the chairman of the lake cleanup program for Lake Champlain, and in charge of education and outreach. And we built a $13 million lake aquarium and science center in Burlington, Vermont. And what we learned from the experts we talked to is you have to have something new every year. because a primary part of our audience is people from the Thumb area who like to just come out for a Saturday and have the view and get out in the air and take a boat ride for a pretty reasonable price. And they always ask the same question, what's new? So we're going to have to keep new things coming in terms of exhibits. But in terms of the campus and the structures, when we finish the fog signal building and then we finish recoding the outside of the lighthouse so it will look new as well, that'll pretty much take care of the capital projects that we have. And so the rest of it will probably after that become programming and whatever new we can put in the display space so that people, we can, Annette and her crew can tell people about, hey, you got to come out to the lighthouse next year because we're going to have this or we're going to have that. And in the museum game, that's what it's all about. You need to keep having some sort of a rotating exhibit space filled with new things so that people want to go out and say, hey, did you hear about that new exhibit? Rather than, it's a nice day, let's go out there. That can become a pretty optional decision.
Is it more fun now that you can see the light at the end of the tunnel? When you first started, you know, you're basically left with a shell. I think of the folks up at the Point of Barks Lighthouse where they shoveled out all that pigeon manure. I mean, you didn't have to do that, but I mean, is it a much nicer feeling when you're this far along and looking towards just now we just have to maintain what we have?
Yeah. Well, what really makes me thrilled about this project is that I'm a part-time resident of Harbor Beach. I'm only up there in residence in the summer at a cottage we have. But, you know, we in the cottage side of things are there as temporaries in the summer. And there are all these terrific people in Harbor Beach who are just remarkable craftsmen, great storytellers, Annette's crew of docents, several retired teachers who really love their community. And I think the thing that most excites me is what it means for the community to have this going on. Personally, I take a lot of pride in getting this done, but also doing it on our own funds. And so it's entirely affordable. A lot of development projects can get really stymied in small communities where there isn't that the high level of resources sometimes it takes to do these things. But really, I think Annette will know what I'm saying here because her crew has really expanded our base of volunteers. We really only had four or five of us doing this for a long time. We'd ask for people to come out and help on special occasions. But Ron Kleba's work especially, where he had 10 of, most of whom were his students, home builders who came out to join him over a day and a half and to put the building up to the state it is now. So we have a whole new group of people that are really fascinated by the project and want to be part of it. And so we've really drawn together as what were used to be two separate communities, the resort people and the city, and have really come together as one to make this project happen. And there really wasn't any way that was happening before. And in a larger sense, I think, and I hope over time, it'll actually be a symbol of pride for the city, which it already is, but for all the residents to understand that they live in a very historic place. I mean, for many decades, it was the largest man-made harbor in the world. And it was literally petitioned and built by mostly local residents who wanted to have the only place that ships could stop between Port Huron and either Saginaw or up north in Alpena. And ended up building a lot. I mean, can you just imagine in those days when, you know, it was still mostly wooded behind? There weren't really many farms to speak of. It was just really starting. And they said, hey, let's build a harbor. Well, I think that spirit is something that we try and follow. And our motto is to do something. If you see something that needs to be fixed, just do it. And so everything has been done with volunteers, all interested in the same thing, in preserving that symbol of Harbor Beach's maritime history. It provides a lot of context and value to the area's history so that people just feel prouder of their community. And that's really what I'm proudest of, not whether a building's going up or not. Those are all means to an end.
I get stories on the wire service every so often about another group that's taking over a lighthouse. Do you folks get together to help these people who are just starting the project to get an idea of where to start, how to raise funds, those types of things? Have you geared yourself up into almost like a clearinghouse where these people can learn from what you've done?
Yeah, that's the function of the Michigan Lighthouse Alliance. There are 129 lighthouses in Michigan, and it's some dispute between 129 and 131, but we hope we're the authority on that. We've done a lot of research. But anyway, Yes, every 2 years we have a conference where we bring together all of as many of our lighthouse groups as can make it, and we talk about and it's gone. It used to be about how can you get a hold of your lighthouse, and that was a big subject of conversation when they were being auctioned off or forget the term. The Coast Guard had some sort of strange term, but
yeah, they anyway, decommissioned them or something.
They were wanting them to go away, and people were lining up to get them. So that's what we were coaching people on and holding work sessions on. But it's really shifted now in the last 4 or 5 years to being about sustainability. Because now that you have your lighthouse, the old saying, be careful what you wish for, how are you going to keep this going? And in a lot of really small communities that have these structures, funding is a tough issue. Finding volunteers is a tough issue. Probably the most important issue to be resolved, and this will come from left field, but a lot of us who are into this, I started when I was quite a bit younger, but, you know, I'm in my 60s now. Most of our volunteers are older, and trying to set up a chain of succession is really a big problem, because if you have the right people, you can raise the money, you can do almost anything, but if you don't have people who are interested in it and are willing to put the passion into it that we have, that's a real problem. So it's interesting you ask that question, because this next conference in 2018, I don't think Annette knows this, I haven't told her yet, but we are, as president of MLA, we are going to change our audience focus from just Michigan to the world. And we've just signed a deal with the World Lighthouse Society, and we are going to be bringing in lighthouse groups from Sweden, from France, from the UK, into the Grand up at Mackinac in the third weekend in May in 2018. And we're going to talk and share stories about lighthouse sustainability from around the world. And what we found is we're really the only group that's holding a national conference. And it wasn't national, it was Michigan-focused, but we started seeing lighthouses from Florida and Ohio and New York showing up in Massachusetts, because there aren't any statewide groups anywhere else that do what we do. And it's all about bringing people together to talk. So we thought it might be interesting and fun to do one with a global focus, because there are some fantastic lighthouses in other parts of the world. But not ironically, it's all the same story. GPS and those types of technologies have replaced having to have staffed lighthouses with, you know, constantly updating equipment. It's all much more simple now. And so there are private groups around the world taking charge of these things. And when you see, there's some fantastic structures, beautiful architecture in Iceland and Sweden. And we really just want to get people together as a global community, because we're all usually in far-off places and we really depend on ourselves and our local people. But it's nice to know you're part of something big. And also something we talk about our own history. I mean, you know, the pharaohs, that the lighthouse in Alexandria in Egypt was the first known structure that had a big fire pile on top of it as a lighthouse. And the history of these aids and navigation structures around the world in very treacherous places, you know, when there weren't large vessels to take people out, they rowed out and back and that sort of thing. There are some amazing stories. And we want to capture some of that as a way to get people here fired up about what their projects are and have them know that they're part of a much, much larger whole.
Well, terrific. I wish you well in all your further efforts in preserving the lighthouse and getting more interactive things for people to do when they're out there. When that building is finally completed, you'll have a space where you can have displays and things that might not necessarily fit inside the lighthouse but are pertinent to its history.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you giving us the time today, and I'm wishing Annette good luck. Annette is a great storyteller. You'll have a lot of fun talking to her next.
All right. Thanks for taking time with us, Buzz.
My pleasure, Craig. Hope to talk to you again.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. We were talking to Buzz, and he is the chair of the Lighthouse Preservation Society locally and head of the Michigan Lighthouse Alliance. And basically, we kind of ignored Annette over here because Buzz was in his vehicle and we wanted to make sure he didn't drive off the road somewhere and just get his part done. But Annette Sweet is the director of the Docents.
That's correct.
Explain what a docent is.
A docent is a tour guide. You go to a museum and you have someone take you through the museum and explain the pictures that you see on the wall. They're called a docent. You have someone take you through a zoo in a group. that person who guides you through and tells you all about it is a docent. So we are docents.
I see. It's the proper name.
It is the proper name. Or another name, yes.
And how many docents does it take to run Lighthouse Tours?
We try to have a docent on every level. I think it's important that we're able to share those things on each level to give a history of what's there, why it's there, and how it was used. So we try to have a docent on each level. We generally have at least 4 docents at the lighthouse throughout our Saturday tour. We have one that greets our guests at
the
break
ground
wall.
Floor.
Mm-hmm. No, at the break
at
wall.
At the break wall.
We started the break wall because that break wall is important. It's the construction of the harbor, how it came about, how it was built is absolutely amazing. As Buzz said, the construction was done by hand, and it was done by hand by hundreds of people, and it took 11 years. It took 11 years because of the length, of course. It's over 8,000 feet in length. But the manner with which it was built was unbelievably difficult, and they had weather to consider. They had injuries to consider. We had a gentleman out one time who his great-great-grandfather worked on the break wall. And what he did was, a youngster at 16 years old, he dove down as the boxes of brick and stone were dropped into the water. They would drive down to ensure that the cribs were set in the proper place. Now imagine how dangerous that was at 16 years old. It's absolutely frightening to me. But that's how it was built. These cribs were built, loaded with stone, set 1-8 after another for over 8,000 feet in length. Now that's pretty good. Buzz alluded to that our harbor is still the world's largest man-made harbor. We are not the world's largest harbor, but we are the world's largest man-made harbor. And if you Google us, it will come up, Harbor Beach, Michigan. So we're pretty proud of that fact.
Now, the lighthouse, it sits at the break in the lighthouse where the boats go through. Originally, the original lighthouse was on the other side, but that was maybe not the best planning with Lake Huron weather, and it eventually the one that's standing today is on the inside of the lighthouse, of the break wall.
Yes, the original lighthouse actually was on the break wall, and it was a skeletal-like structure, much like an old-fashioned windmill. There were no living quarters there. All it was a light at the top of this structure that was
up. You'd have to climb up that in a storm to light it?
Yes. And it was lit with pig oil. So all that was out there was just a small building with which to store supplies. So the lighthouse keeper each day would row out from shore. Now, we're about a mile out. They would row out from shore. They'd have to stay there all night to maintain that light, and then do their cleaning of lens, etc., in the morning, because pig oil, of course, would soot and cover the lens. Then he would have to row back to shore. And this was done 7 days a week, every day, as long as boats were traveling up and down the lake. So it was an arduous job to begin with. But lighthouse keepers managed to keep jobs for a long time, and it was a coveted position because it was federally funded at the time. So that was guaranteed income.
Secure.
Yes.
But it moved on to a pedestal, a foundation of cement and block and such that they set on the inside. And that's the lighthouse we know.
That's correct. Because of a terrible storm that took place in 1883, they almost lost the lighthouse and the lighthouse keeper. So it was determined then that something more substantial needed to be built. And that's when construction began on the lighthouse that we see today. It has a basement and everything.
This was a kit, actually. There are lighthouses like this around the country. Because it was manufactured to be kind of a standard for certain locations that it would work.
They tagged them as the spark plug lighthouses. Now, I'm not a mechanic, so I couldn't tell you what a spark plug looks like. But that's what they say these lighthouses look like. And yes, it was a kit, which floored me initially, because I'm a quilter and thinking about quilts and kits, I'm thinking something small. But this was on a tremendous level, and to bring out, now you got to remember, the lighthouse is built with cast iron. It's 5/8 inch thick cast iron. That's no lightweight piece of material that's been brought out. And these pieces were curved and huge. I could not stretch my arms just about from one to the other. That's how big they were. So that was a tremendous job in itself. Now imagine also there's a basement under the lighthouse. Generally, it's perfectly dry. There was a basement under the fog signal building as well. So imagine building all of that in 1885.
No cranes, no fancy barges, you know, with the geo-positioning and everything.
No, but they did have crane-type pieces. What they had, because the lighthouse was not actually connected to the breakwall at the time, they had a lift that they would turn up so that when the lighthouse keeper rowed out, he would come in between the breakwall and the lighthouse and hook up to the lift, and then they would raise the boat up to come up to the level of the lighthouse. So they did have some kind of a pulley system with which to work with, but it wasn't anything like we have today. So it was a whole lot different, yes. So that lighthouse was completed and opened in 1885, and it was a magnificent structure then, and it is today. So it's something that we're very, very proud of and love to share with our guests.
And during their usage, they were tended to very, very particularly to maintain them, because these were essential for shipwrecks, people die, those types of things. You had to have them. You needed to know the rotation and the color of the light to know where you are, so you don't think you're in Port Sanilac rather than Harbor Beach or up near Point of Barks. I mean, they all had to be coordinated as to what signal you got, so you had an idea of where you are.
That was the GPS of those days. And the lights were also timed in certain manner of color and timing that would determine to the captain exactly the position he was in. It was, the lighthouse had to be maintained in absolutely perfect order at all times. The inspectors were very strict about maintaining the lighthouse. They would have surprise inspections of the lighthouse so that the lighthouse keeper and his assistants always had to be in uniform, buttons polished. The entire lighthouse had to be in perfect order at all times. They never knew when they were going to be inspected. And if the inspection did not go well, they could lose their position. Again, a coveted position they did not want to lose. So a lot of care was taken into maintaining the lighthouse while the lighthouse keepers were there.
And in that era, there wasn't a lot of other types of communication. You can't hear, oh, he inspected Port Sanilac, he's probably coming up here. It was a surprise.
It definitely was a surprise. You never knew when he was coming in to inspect that lighthouse. So you had to be on top of it at all times, yes. And the light had to be cleaned regularly. The lighthouse keeper, even though he had his uniform and the brass buttons, they had to wear an apron to cover so that the brass buttons did not scratch the lens itself. There were so many things that they had to do to maintain that lighthouse at all times. And as I said, it was a coveted position. Lauren Trescott held the position for over 30 years. They just did not want to give it up.
And the protection of the lighthouse lens is because crystal, if you have any type of crystal in your house, you know it can get scratched and damaged, and that's what sends the light out. It's got to be done right, and you don't want to scratch or scuff up this thing.
Absolutely correct. And it is that lens is a magnificent structure that I highly recommend everyone see. It still belongs to the Coast Guard, and it is on loan to us, and it is in the Grice House Museum. And when you purchase a ticket to come and visit our lighthouse as a guest, you also, with that ticket, are able to get a discounted ticket into the Grice Museum to see the original lens. So it's like a twofer. I highly recommend it.
But at the top of the lighthouse is a replica.
Absolutely.
They used to have this little LED thing that didn't look anything like you would think would be at the top of a lighthouse, but you folks have gone to the trouble and expense of having a replica made of the particular lens that was in there, so it looks accurate.
It is magnificent. The replica, to put the two together, you couldn't tell the difference. It is so, so on spot, perfect. The gentleman that built it is amazing in himself, in his work that he does. It's just so neat. The light is perfect when it goes on, and it's quite a sight to see. And when you go up there to the gallery up at the top, and then you go up, you can see the lens itself, and it is absolutely beautiful. It's a work of art. As far as I'm concerned, it is truly a work of art. Our Lighthouse Preservation Society worked very, very hard to raise the funds to have that lens built and then brought here and installed. It was a labor of love for quite a few years to get that done. So my compliments and thank you to all of those people that worked very hard. And we have a lot of residents in Harbor Beach who have worked very hard to maintain that lighthouse. The thing is, we would like to share that lighthouse with more residents of Harbor Beach. It is their history, and we want to share it with them so that they can all take a good look at that lighthouse and what Harbor Beach is all about.
Tell us about the tours. They start this weekend?
They start this weekend. Our first tour goes out, the boat leaves the marina at 9:20 in the morning. Our last tour boat goes out at noon, and the boat leaves the marina every 20 minutes. So we have a boat going at 9:20, and then the boat drops everyone off and goes back and picks up another load up. We can take six groups of six each time we go out. It's Jay Lynn Charter that brings our guests back and forth to the lighthouse.
You've contracted with them to do the work.
Yes.
Or the city has.
The city has contracted with Jay Lynn, yes. And she has a very comfortable boat, and Captain Janice and Captain Gunn are just awesome, and they're very informative. You have a wonderful ride and a beautiful view of the lighthouse and the shoreline from the boat as well.
But you need to remember that if you have someone who would have difficulty boarding a boat, maybe climbing a ladder to get up to the lighthouse, these are considerations to make, because you hate to have somebody have to just sit there and watch you have the fun. The whole point is to get everyone involved, and it's not ADA accessible. It was never meant to be, as the lighthouse was originally, and so at this point at least, you have to be at least somewhat ambulatory to get up there.
Yes, we have had guests who have had some difficulty, but it is not truly handicap acceptable. In order to get into the lighthouse, you have to get up onto the break wall. In order to get onto the break wall, you have to go up the steps off of the dock. The dock is a floating dock, so it's like you've got to be careful, and you get up onto the break wall, and then you have another set of stairs to get up onto the base of the lighthouse. And then, of course, there's stairs in the lighthouse. So handicap accessible it is not. If you are in a wheelchair or anything like that, I wish we could accommodate you, but we really can't.
Not at this point, anyway.
Not at this point.
There may be a time in the future when things can happen, when we get different tech that will make it happen. But for now, it is.
You need to be ambulatory. So yes.
You need to be able to climb a little bit or have someone who can help you do that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And the tours run how long? The
tours run until our last tour boat goes out September 23rd. And we will be there every Saturday, weather permitting. If we have a heavy storm, of course, we wouldn't be taking anyone out. But although we have been out there in storms, which is really a lot of fun, it's like really experiencing what lighthouse keepers live through. I mean, it wasn't always a beautiful sunny day. They hit storms that were hellacious. And yeah, it's kind of interesting. I've been out there in a storm.
But one advantage you have is that it's in the harbor. The full brunt of Lake Huron, for the most part, usually is not what you have to deal with. It's just what's churned up in the harbor.
Churned up in the harbor and the winds, yes. We do get the winds out there, that's for sure. And it's wonderful to experience that kind of living. As soon as you step off the boat and you step onto the base of the lighthouse, all of a sudden you're turned back in time to the early 1900s, to how people lived and what they did and what the lighthouse keepers had to do to survive and keep going on a daily basis. They had to row out back and forth just to bring supplies out. I mean, imagine, and their food was set up by the government. They were allowed so many pounds of beef, so many pounds of pork, so many pounds of sugar, coffee, etc. They were allotted certain amounts of food. And we don't think of things that way. We just run to the grocery store and get whatever we need. They couldn't do that. They had to go with what they were allotted. They had to row it out for a mile out there and bring their supplies out there. So it was unique.
And that is one of the unique features of the Harbor Beach Lighthouse, is that it isn't on land like you see a lot of them on a shoreline. It is actually, it's on the harbor, but it's out in the water.
Yes, it's a mile out from shore. Yes, it is unique, and it's wonderful, and it's awesome, and I highly recommend anyone, even if you're not a lighthouse aficionado, if it's not your forte generally, you would still find it very interesting to see and to be a part of. It's a part of your history.
Now, you can make reservations online.
Yes.
And you kind of recommend that, especially some of the big weekends like Maritime Festival, 4th of July, these types of weekends fill up fast.
Yes, they do. So I highly recommend online. HarborBeachLighthouse.org will get you right to our website. You can book online, charge it onto PayPal or however you so desire, and you are guaranteed that slot at that time. We do take walk-ons as long as there is an opening at the time.
And if you cannot go, I assume your charge is canceled because of the weather or whatever.
Yes, or your ticket can be used on another day.
Absolutely. You can go to the site and say, well, I'll be back on this weekend. You have an availability, and they'll change it over to that. And
that's correct.
And then you're good to go again.
Yes, we try very hard to accommodate our guests. And we've had guests from all over the country and the world. We've had guests from Germany, from Japan, from England. We've had guests all the way from California all the way through to Maine. So they've come from all over the country, which is really neat to see our lighthouse. So that tells you how special we are.
Well, I've also heard that we've got kind of a nice tour for them. There's one in Port Huron, Port Sanilac, Harbor Beach,
Point
Lighthouse Park, and then in Port Austin there, the Reef Lighthouse. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of lighthouses to see right along the shoreline of the thumb.
You go right around the thumb, and it's awesome. Yes, it is. We have a lot to offer. The thumb has a lot to offer. So we encourage guests to come to the thumb and see all there is to see.
But the tours are on Saturday. If you want to actually go out there and see it, not just take a picture from shore or from a boat, you need to make reservations and get your slot set up.
Yes, absolutely. We'd love to have you out there.
Well, very good. I appreciate you taking time with us today, and I hope you get a good turnout again this year. I assume you've had a good turnout through the last five years or so that you've been doing this.
We have had excellent turnout. Yes, we have, and we hope to continue to do so.
And do you see a lot of familiar faces each year?
Sometimes we do. We see people that like to come year after year. Yes, we do, and that's a good thing. You get to make friends with those people, and I like that.
Well, and sometimes they bring a few more relatives with them that they told us about, and then, oh, now we'll all go.
Word of mouth is the best way, yes.
Well, I appreciate you being with us.
Thank you,
Greg. Have a good turnout. Again, it is starting this Saturday. Go online to the Harbor Beach Lighthouse website, and you will be able to see if there's reservations available. If there is, you can book it and be ready to go.
Correct.
Our guests today on the program have been Annette Sweet. She's the director of the Docents. Those are the guides at the Harbor Beach Lighthouse tours. Also, Buzz Herr. He is chair of the Lighthouse Preservation Society and head of the Michigan Lighthouse Alliance, which he told us is going to be almost a national, international thing
in
next year. So we've been talking about the lighthouse tours. Again, they're starting this weekend. They run into September. Book yourself a time. Go out there and see what they have to offer. They have a lot of interesting things out there. Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.